Hey, good morning. It's great to see everybody this morning. We actually had a much larger crowd than normal in the early service because we had a lot of people who thought they were showing up early for this service, but weren't. So anyway, we had a great time. Anyway, welcome. It's glad you're here. Glad you got an extra hour of sleep, right? Good to be worshiping together. Just want to give you an update. A few folks have asked about how we did with the Tanya Project. And so we reached almost our goal. Our goal was $50,000 to raise that over 6 months, next 6 months, to help Tanya Center, one of our ministry partners in Kenya, be able to get solar powered on their campus. And so we are partnering with about five other churches, I think is what it is at this point, in Canada, who are also sharing in this project. They're raising the other part of the funds to do this. So this is exciting. Please be in prayer for the other churches as they continue to cast vision to their communities for that as well. And then the other thing I want to tell you about is Tuesday is Election Day. Anybody glad that it'll be over soon like me? Yeah, lots of us. But we have an opportunity as a church to serve our community, and it's super easy because our community is going to come to us on Tuesday. Isn't that great? So we are a polling center for the Board of Elections for Fairfax County. We have been for a few years now. And so the surrounding neighborhoods will be coming here to vote, the other end of the buildings where they set that up. And I don't know how many we will have here. I feel like during a presidential election, they generally expect around 1,500 to 1,700 folks. And what I'm hearing is they're kind of expecting about 50 to 60% of that nationwide. So I don't know what that translates into our polling center. But we're going to have a bunch of folks on campus Tuesday. And so what we want to do is just kind of roll out some hospitality around that. We saw some really good benefits and got a lot of great response 2 years ago when we did this for the presidential election because, you know, that election was a pretty tense election. And so we just wanted to try and help ratchet that down a little bit as best we could. This election is not a lot different, right? Because not a lot's changed in 2 years. It's still pretty tense around political stuff. And so what we're going to be doing all day, starting about 6:30, running to about 7:30 at night, we're operating in two-hour shifts with volunteers. What's that? 5:30. Who's going to be here at 5:30? Oh, Carolyn's going to be here. Carolyn would love it if you joined her at 5:30 on Tuesday. Anyway, two-hour shifts. If you can't work a full two-hour shift, that's okay. We'll work around it. But we'll be handing out cups of coffee and Krispy Kreme donuts because Krispy Kreme donuts just make everything better, doesn't it? Amen? I grew up in North Carolina, so I grew up on them. But anyway, so if you're free Tuesday, we'd love to have you connect. There's a sign-up genius on your app, on your mobile device. If you've downloaded that, it's on the website. So just grab one of those slots and come and join us on Tuesday. We'd love to have you. It's also a great opportunity for kids, students, middle high school students, elementary kids to come and help us with that. They're out of school that day. So bring them up here and keep them out of trouble, right? So let's go to God in prayer about all of that before we jump into Scripture. God, we just thank you for the Tanya Center, and I just thank you for the generosity of this church and the generosity of other churches that are partnering with them to help them do what they do even better. And so I thank you for our year-round partnership that we have with them and what we do throughout the year with the Tanya Center. But also thank you for this unique opportunity to step into this moment and help them in a significant way that will have lasting impact for years to come. And so I just pray that you would just continue to bless this project as we move forward with it. Bless Joseph and Jennifer and all the staff there as they continue to lead the children and bless the children and their families. And then God, we just pray for Tuesday as we go to vote as a nation, as a country. And I just pray that it would be a peaceful, that there would be as little stress and tension as possible, and that you would just unify us in one way or another. And I thank you for our church and just for our willingness to step into this moment and just create some hospitality and just try to bring just a level of peace, even with something as simple as a cup of coffee and a donut. But I do pray that would be the outcome here on our campus on Tuesday, and I just pray you'd bless everyone who helps us with that. In Christ's name I pray, amen. So grab your notes, and let me tell you where we're going over the next couple of weeks. Next week, I'm traveling. I won't be here next Sunday. Lex is our student and discipleship pastor. He'll be teaching and preaching, so you don't want to miss that. If you're in town, make sure you're here because he's great at that stuff. And so we're all expecting great things from you, Lex. So pressure's on, right, buddy? Anyway, and then in 2 weeks, the Sunday after Thanksgiving, We have a tradition, we've done this for years, that we call open mic. And it's just, it's not karaoke, so don't get excited. But it's just your opportunity to just share briefly with your church just what you're thankful for, or something you've seen God do in your life, or just something that you're praying through in your life. So basically, we just set up a couple of mics down on the floor and just open it up to anybody that wants to share. No pressure about sharing if that's not your gig. But even if you're not into sharing in a crowd like that, I highly recommend you come, because you will be encouraged by the people who do share. So join us for that. So today, what we're going to do today, since we do have our elections coming up and we're going into that on Tuesday, I thought I'd take the opportunity to talk about something that I think is just really, really important as we think about our country and our leaders and everything that's going on. And I want to start by telling you something that's really, really discouraging to me personally, and it's this, that I have participated, I get that slide, I have participated in every bad decision I've ever made. I have. I was there for every one of them. I was there for all of the bad professional decisions I made, all the bad financial decisions, all the bad relational decisions, all the bad parenting decisions. I was there for all of them. Every bad decision I have ever made, I was there for all of them. I was the one who talked myself into sleeping in when I was a freshman in college and not going to class. And I was the one who talked myself into dessert and talked myself out of exercise and all of that stuff, right? And it's embarrassing to say that, but the reason I can share that with you is not because I know you won't tell anybody else and you'll keep it in the room. The reason I can tell you that is because you have participated in every bad decision that you have ever made as well. Am I right? My greatest challenge in life isn't you. My greatest challenge isn't my job. My greatest challenge isn't decisions. My greatest challenge isn't my kids. My greatest challenge, it isn't even my health. My greatest challenge every single morning, and your greatest challenge every single morning, is the person in the mirror. We face our greatest challenge every morning in the mirror, don't we? And the truth is, and I don't have to know this about you, but the truth is, you're difficult to lead. And you know that, or you should know that, because you try to do it every day when you look in that mirror, don't you? So in light of just where we are and where our country is and where we're headed this week, I thought we would stop and just talk about leading the person in the mirror. Leading the person in the mirror. And it's interesting that our new favorite national pastime, and I'm a part of this, so I'm not pointing any fingers or putting any blame or anything like that, but our new favorite national pastime is criticizing the national leadership, right? Of the other party, correct? I mean, it used to be baseball. That used to be our favorite pastime, but now it's just criticizing the national leadership of someone else's party. But again, and speaking for myself, and I think I speak for most of us, I have done more, if I'm honest, right? I have done more to undermine my own success and my own progress than any political candidate ever elected, right? So today we're talking about self-leadership, leading the person in the mirror, which is not a fun thing to talk about, just a heads up, because it just reminds us that we all have a lot of work to do on ourselves. But this, I think, is an extremely important topic for a lot of reasons. I want to give you three reasons that I think it's really, really important we think about this, and then we're going to jump into some practical stuff and all of that as we get ready to move into next week and as we move into this next season as a nation. And so the topic of self-leadership, it's important first of all because of this. You will never be a leader worth following if you don't lead yourself well. You will never be a leader worth following if you don't lead yourself well. You won't be a leader worth following at home. You won't be a leader worth following at work. You won't be a leader worth following at your school. You will not be a leader worth following if you don't lead yourself well. And then the second reason it's so important is similar to this, and it's this: exceptional self-leadership is the key to sustained influence. Now, there's a difference between having influence and having a position. There's a difference between having influence and having a title or having authority and all that, but there's a relationship between influence and how a person leads themselves, because we are rarely open to influence of someone that we don't respect. Am I right? And we have to respect people when they're our boss, and we have to do what people say who are in authority. But in terms of being open to their influence in our lives, we are rarely open to the influence of people that we do not respect. And we don't generally respect people who do not lead themselves well. So if you want to have people's respect, if you want to have influence with somebody in someone's life, self-leadership is the only way to do it. There's just no way to get around that. It is essential to developing respect in the minds and hearts of the people that you want to lead. And if you're a parent, or if you plan to be a parent one day, this is so, so important. You know, when each of my kids were younger, and I think every parent experiences this, at some point when their kids get to be a certain age. But when my kids were younger, at some point, and I don't really remember their age, but at some point they got into this phase where whenever we would ask them to do something, right, they would say, you know, Andrew would say, "Dad, do I have to? Do I have to? What do you mean, do I have to, Dad?" And I mean, they were probably like 8 or 9 years old, I don't know. And so finally, I just got tired of it. And so I just said to him, "No, you don't have to." And he was like, "Really?" And I was like, and then, you know, got this big grin on his face. And I said, "Look, buddy, let me just tell you how the real world works, right?" I said, you can't make anybody do anything. Once you got too big for me to do this to, right, I can't make you do anything. So in the real world, you can't make anybody do anything. And you can only keep people from doing anything, right? And then I said, that's why we have prisons in our world, right? Prisons are where we keep people from doing things, not where we make people do things. And then he kind of got the idea of where this conversation was going with his dad. So the point is, if you want to lead with influence, because you really can't make anybody do anything, can you? Not even your kids, and not even the people you work with or who work with you or for you. And so how do you gain influence? Well, I'll tell you, and it has nothing to do with how smart you are. And gaining influence has nothing to do with how much education you have or how much experience or talent you have. It has everything to do with how you lead yourself. And then the third reason self-leadership is so, so important is this. Exceptional self-leadership is the key to sustained performance. And we know this because we've seen this. And whether we're talking about it in the home or in the workplace, when a leader burns out or when a leader has to be taken out, it's usually because of some poor self-leadership somewhere along the way. Another way of saying this is this: great leaders last because they lead themselves first. Great leaders last because they lead themselves first. So the bottom line, and then we're going to look at some practical things, but the bottom line is this: we are no better. You are no better. I am no better. We are no better than what we do. And there is only one person that can make us do anything, and it's the person in the mirror. And this is a big deal. Whether you're a religious person or not, this is a big deal. Whether you're a Christian or not, this is a big deal. So today, I want to give you just three decisions that I think we should consider, that I think we really should actually make. And there's a lot more than three. Lots of books have been written on this. There's lots of blogs have been written on this. There's probably been several episodes of Dr. Phil on this. You might have some things to add to the list. I'd love to hear what you would add to this list of three. But today, I want to just give you three decisions that I think are really, really important as we think about becoming better self-leaders, leading ourselves well. Because here's the deal. Your future depends on it. It really does. Your future depends on it. And if you're someone who other people report to you, if you're a leader in your organization or something like that, or if you're leading in a family and you're a parent or a grandparent, the people who report to you, the people you are leading, their future depends on how well you lead yourself too. So here are three decisions, and I think decision number one probably is the most important, but probably the hardest to do as well, and here it is. I will not lie to myself, even when the truth makes me feel bad about myself. That's decision number one. I will not lie to myself, even when the truth about myself makes me feel bad about myself. Now, this is something you will not hear a lot in culture today, but did you know there are worse things in life than feeling bad about yourself? It's true, there are. There are worse things in life than feeling bad about yourself, but that's not what our culture tells us, and that's not even what we tell ourselves, is it? We say things like, no, there's nothing worse than feeling bad about myself, so I have to tell myself whatever I have to tell myself in order to feel better about myself, don't we? No, there are worse things than feeling bad about yourself. Do you know what's worse than feeling bad about yourself? Hanging on to what's bad about yourself, right? That's worse than feeling bad about yourself. So it's okay to feel bad about yourself if it motivates you to let go of whatever it is and get rid of whatever it is that's bad about yourself. Back in the 17th century, B.C., There was a prophet by the name of Jeremiah, and Jeremiah was a prophet in the nation of Israel, and he was a prophet in the nation of Israel at a really, really bad time in the history of Israel. And God gave him one of the worst jobs you can imagine a prophet getting. He lived in Jerusalem. He lived in a time when God had just been warning the nation of Israel over and over and over again. And God kept saying to him, if you break my laws, if you worship other gods, if you continue to abandon the covenant that we have together, God says, I'm just going to have to put you in time out. I mean, that's what he basically said through Jeremiah. He said, I'm going to send the Babylonians in, King Nebuchadnezzar, and they're going to take all of the leaders and they're going to send all of the leaders to some other place, right? Time out. And he said, they're going to leave all the farmers and all the workers, because the Babylonians were smart. They wanted the crops to be grown and all the work to be done and land taken care of because they could profit from that. But he said, we're going to take all of your leaders and we're going to make them go somewhere else. And so he just kept warning them. And God said, if you don't obey me, he said, I'm not just going to sit back and let you just run wild and do whatever you want to do. That's not what a good father does. A good father disciplines their children. So Jeremiah, he went to the king and he went to the leaders of Israel, and he basically said to them, look, guys, it's too late, right? It's basically game over. I mean, the Babylonians are on their way. They're going to be here any minute, knocking on our door, and time has run out. We cannot win this fight. I mean, just imagine if that was your assignment, to go to the king and the leaders and to say all of that. But he basically said, you guys just need to go ahead and surrender the city. Just open up the gates. When they get here, just go ahead and let them in. There'll be a whole lot less bloodshed, a whole lot less people will die and all that. So you can imagine how this went over. Not well with the king and with the leaders. So basically they took Jeremiah and they threw him in a dry well, only it wasn't really dry because they're never really dry. And he's standing in the bottom of this pit with his, you know, knee deep in mud, basically. It's kind of a funny story when you read it. And it's funny because he just kept prophesying. I mean, here he is. He's just preaching from this well. He's standing in a pit of mud. You know, people walking by and it's noise coming out of this hole in the ground. And it's Jeremiah just prophesying away. Well, eventually, he gets rescued by some of his friends. He escapes to Egypt. So it's just an amazing story. But it's also just a terrible story because you have the nation of Israel. You have God's people. And they just keep breaking this covenant that they have with him. And they just went too far. And so God just said, time out. I've got to teach you some lessons here. And we, as a part of Jeremiah's prophecy, though, right in the middle of this, he makes this really, really incredible statement. It's a statement that I think really we all know is true, but we just don't think about it. And here's what he said. He said, the Lord told me to tell everyone this, that the heart is deceitful above all things. Jeremiah said, your heart, my heart, is deceitful above all things. I mean, think about that. There's a lot of things in the world, right? A lot of things. What's the most deceitful? Jeremiah says, God says, your heart's the most deceitful. And beyond cure, he says. He said, there's no hope. It's beyond cure. Who can understand it? And the answer to that question, who can understand it, is really nobody, right? I mean, you don't understand your own heart sometimes. I don't understand my own heart sometimes. This is why we say, you know, why did I do that? Jeremiah says, I know. He's like, why did we say that to them? Jeremiah says, I know. You know, why did we go there? Why did we make that decision? Why did we buy that? Jeremiah says, I know. You know, why did I say yes to that? Why did I say yes to that again? What is wrong with me? And Jeremiah says, I know what's wrong with you. It's your heart. It's deceitful. The easiest person in the world for you to deceive, the easiest person in the world for me to deceive is the person in the mirror. Nobody does a better job at selling you on bad ideas than you, right? I mean, you're a sucker for you. As soon as you see something you want, what do you start doing? You start selling yourself on it, don't you? I mean, the salesperson, all they need to do is just shut up and get out of the way and let you go to work, because you will sell yourself on it. You will drive out in it if they will just get out of the way, right? I'll just drive away in it, right? Or I'll just wear it, you know, just cut the tags off and I'll just put it on and I'll wear it, or take it out of the box and I'll just wear it, right? Nobody is more effective at selling you on stuff than you are. So self-leadership, effective self-leadership, requires sometimes brutal, and this is why we don't like to do it, but it requires sometimes brutal honesty with ourselves. And here's the truth. You can't lead yourself as long as you're lying to yourself. Have you ever worked with somebody who lied? I mean, you ever tried to do that in maybe in your job or somewhere else when you try to accomplish something with somebody who was a liar? You can't work with a liar, can you? What you do with a liar is you fire a liar. And I think that's what Jeremiah would probably say to us today. He says, you need to fire the liar in you. And you need to hire someone who's going to be honest with you and tell you the truth. You know, from now on, I will not lie to myself. From now on, I will tell myself the truth. That's the beginning of good self-personal leadership. Let me show you something that Jesus said, and then we'll move on. Jesus made this statement, and a lot of us may not even realize Jesus said this, but he said, and tons of politicians have said this through the years. I don't think they even know where it came from, but he said this. John Cook wrote it down for us, but Jesus said, you will know the truth, and the truth will set you free. And Jesus was talking about something very specific here, but in this little phrase he gives us, it's so powerful because truth really will set us free. It will set you free, but the opposite is true as well. And I think that was Jeremiah's point, that not only does truth set you free, dishonesty will imprison you, kind of like my conversation with my kids, right? And if we're not careful, we imprison ourselves when we're not honest with ourselves. So we all want to lead well, don't we? I mean, we all want to lead well at home, if we're parents, if we're spouses. We all want to lead well at work. You want to lead well in your community. You want to lead wherever you are. If you're leading in your homeowners association, God bless you. You want to lead well, don't you? So decision number one, I will not lie to myself, even when it into truth makes me feel bad about myself. Decision number two, I will prioritize what I value most over what I want now. I will prioritize what I value most over what I want now. This is what great leadership is all about, what great self-leadership is all about. This is the long-range approach to leading ourselves. Now, let me give you a definition of leadership because this will kind of help us with where we're going with this. And this definition I learned several years ago from a guy by the name of Kevin Ford. Kevin Ford is the late Billy Graham's nephew. His dad was Billy Graham's brother-in-law. I'm not sure the connection. But Kevin has a consulting firm in this area called TAG. And our church has worked with TAG through the years doing some strategic planning. And early on when we were looking at working with TAG, I sat down and had lunch with Kevin. And we were talking about what leadership was and what it meant, talking about our church's dynamics and all that. And he gave me this definition that I'll never forget. But the definition he gave was simply this, that leadership is taking people where they need to go. And that's what we want to do when we're leading, isn't it? We want to take people somewhere. And then he said something that I'll never forget. He said, David, leadership is taking people where they need to go. They may not know they need to go there, and they may not want to go there. Leadership is taking them there. So leading is all about knowing where the destination is and what is the goal and what are we trying to accomplish as a team or as an organization. So if leading is about moving a group of people or even moving yourself in the direction of a destination, the question we all should be asking ourselves when it comes to leading ourselves is where am I leading myself or where are you leading yourself? You know, if self-leadership is all about moving in a particular direction, what direction are you moving in? And the answer, or at least the answer I think we all ought to adopt and apply, is that you're leading yourself towards what you value most in life, not what you want now, because what you want now is rarely what you actually want, what you value most. And most people, and the older I get, the more I'm convinced of this, but I think most people spend their whole lives and they never really discover what they value most, oftentimes until it's too late. And to lead yourself well, you've got to figure that out. Great self-leadership is about leading yourself to what you value most, and you can't lead yourself there if you don't know what it is. Now, if you're a Christian, if you're a follower of Jesus, there's a little bit of a twist to this, and it's this, that if I've devoted myself as best I know how to God, and if I've devoted myself to following Jesus, if I'm a follower of Jesus, then I should begin valuing what the one that I'm following values most, right? And if you're not a Christian, that's fine. Figure out what you value most and go after that. But once a person decides, hey, I want to follow Jesus, then it is on us. It is up to us to discover what does the one I'm following, what does my Savior value most, and how do I arrange my life around what he values most? And fortunately for us, Jesus actually told us what he values most. And in fact, this is what Jesus said he values most, glorifying my Father in heaven by loving the people that are made in his image. That what I value most, Jesus said, is honoring God and demonstrating my honor and my love for God with how I treat other people. Do you know what Jesus valued most? He valued you and the person to your right and the person to your left and your friends and your family and the person that you see at work every day and you don't even know their name and the person that you avoid because you don't like them. And Jesus says, not only do I like them, I love them. And so as a follower of mine, you need to figure out how to express some value towards them. And here's how Jesus said it. It was right before he was arrested. He was with his closest followers. It was the last time he would be with them before he went to the cross. And he basically pulls them all together. And he says, okay, guys, he says, if you don't get anything else, if you forget everything else I've taught you over the last 3 years, I want you to remember this because this is the bottom line of what my entire time on this planet has been about. And he said, if you will do this one thing and if you will get this right, he said, then when it comes to the end of your life, you will look back and you will see that you got everything right. And here's what Jesus said to him. He said, a new command I give you, love one another. To which the disciples said, that's not new. And Jesus said, well, I'm not through. And he said, a new command I give to you, love one another. As I have loved you, so you must love one another. And what Jesus did was, Jesus took, you've heard the golden rule, right? Do unto others, you'd have them do unto you. Jesus took that, and he took it to the new level, and he raised the bar with his followers with that new command. He said, a new command I give you, love one another as I have loved you. And how did he love us? He gave his life for us. And why would Jesus give this command? Because of what he valued most. And what he valued most was you and me and everybody else on the planet. And is this important? And Jesus said, yes, this is important. And here's why this new command is so, so important. He said, by this new command, everyone will know that you are my disciples. Everyone will know that you are one of my followers, that you've decided that you're going to wrap your priorities around my priorities, that you've decided that you are going to value what I value. By this, everyone will know that you are my disciples if you love one another. And then years later, the Apostle Paul would write something on the other side of the resurrection of Jesus. And Paul would say it this way, the only thing that counts, and you think about that and you think, wow, Paul, you wrote a lot of stuff. What are you saying here? Paul says, the only thing that counts. In other words, same as Jesus, right? If you forget everything else, don't forget this. If you want to know what counts, and counts means value, right? If you want to know what is most valuable, the only thing that counts, he says, is faith expressing itself through love. Confidence in God, that's faith. Confidence in God and love for other people, Paul says. That's where followers of Jesus go, and that's where they are leading in terms of their personal self-leadership, and that's where people who follow them end up as well. And so let me frame this in a little different way. Let me frame it with this question. Would you be happy? Would you be happy with your life if at the end of your life you had lived your life with faith and love at the center of your life? Would you be happy if you got to the end of your life, and when you got there, you were able to look back and see that you had lived your life with faith in God and love for others at the center of your life? And the answer to that question is yes. And the way that I know the answer to that question is yes is because every funeral I've ever attended, I've been to a lot, but every funeral I've ever attended screams yes as the answer to that question. Because every single funeral, the good ones where there's tons of people there and lots of great things to say about the person, and the ones where people are like, hey, let's just look over there and let's not look that way for a little bit, right? You know, it's kind of like, you know, somebody's got to say something good about this person, but nobody really wants to be the person to do it. Usually falls on the pastor to do it, I'm just saying. But do you know what you learn? Do you know what you learn at every funeral? I mean, don't miss this. You learn this, the value of life is always measured in terms of how much of it was given away. The value, there's our word, the value of a life is always measured in terms of how much of it did we give away. So do you know where we're to lead ourselves if we're followers of Jesus? We are to lead ourselves towards valuing other people because people matter and people count. And if you will do that, if you will just get this one thing right, Jesus said, if you will get this one thing right, you will get everything else right along the way. So decision number one is I will not lie to myself. Even when the truth about myself makes me feel bad about myself. Decision number two is I will prioritize what I value most over what I want in the here and now. And then the last decision that I think we all ought to consider making is this. I will not attempt to lead myself by myself. I will not attempt to lead myself by myself. And let me say this, and you may not agree with me, but you actually can't lead yourself by yourself. You can't. In fact, your past, the positive part of your past and the part of your past that you hope nobody ever finds out about kind of underscores the reality of this, that you cannot lead yourself by yourself. Let me put it another way. Your greatest regrets, remember those? Your greatest regrets were with people you wish you'd never met, right? In fact, it's worse than that. Most of our greatest regrets were with friends that we wish we had never met, right? Your greatest regrets were with people that you liked and they liked you. And do you know what you shared? You shared common interests with them, but you may not have shared common values with them. And so consequently, what they wanted now was not what you wanted now. And so you ended up with some sort of regret, but you were with people that you liked. Why? Because we all do life with other people, don't we? But it's not enough to simply do life with people we like, because your life will be shaped and influenced by the people you spend time with. I mean, this is what every parent worries about, because every parent knows that their kids' friends will determine the direction and the quality of their life. And that's true for us as adults too, that our friends will actually determine the direction and the quality of our lives. So again, we can't lead ourselves by ourselves, and we need community. We are created for community, and you're going to find it somewhere. But you don't simply need to be in community with people who share your common interests. You need to be in community with people who share your values, people who are moving in the same direction as you, people who will tell you the unfiltered truth because they love you and because they value you. And here's a great quote from another pastor. His name is Adam Johnson, and he made this statement, and it's so relevant to what we're talking about. He said this: when we push back from feedback, we push back from the better version of ourselves. When we push back from feedback, we push back from a better version of ourselves. Isn't that true? I mean, none of us like feedback, do we? At least not critical feedback. Nobody likes that. But the only way to lead ourselves well, the only way to get to a better version of ourselves, is to open ourselves up to feedback from people who share our values and who are moving in the same direction that we are. This is why we talk about small groups so much around here. And it's why we want everybody who sits in a row on Sunday morning to be in a circle sometime during the week. Because circles are better than rows. It's where real life happens. It's where life change happens. It's where we do life together. And life is better when we do life together. And nobody can make you do anything except you. But when you're doing life with people who share your values, it's just amazing how much better we all do. You know, and parents, let me say something to you just for a minute. Here it is. I have two kids. I have a 15-year-old and I have a 19-year-old. And all they know so far as church are the environments here for kids and students. And I don't want to say that parents, that you're crazy not to have your kids and students here every Sunday, right? But parents, you're crazy not to have your kids and students here every Sunday, because we've created environments for our kids and for our students to partner with you so that your kids can have other kids in their life and do life with them, and kids who are, and students who are on the same trajectory and who have the same values and are going in the same direction as you want yours to. And as a parent, I'm telling you, you're going to need a partner. And that's what a great local church is it's a partner as we help students and kids understand how the world works and how their faith is a part of all of that and how they can actually live out their faith in the real world. Because again, your friends will determine the direction and the quality of your life. And the thing that scares you to death the most as a parent is probably that your kids' friends will determine the direction and the quality of their lives. So let us help you with that. But here's the deal. We can't help you if your kids are not here just about every week. And I know what some of you are saying to me in your heads right now, right? You're saying, well, David, we're just busy, right? We got a lot going on. I understand busy. I know you're busy. Like I said, I've got two kids of my own. My wife and I both work full-time. I serve on the board of directors for four other nonprofit organizations, and my family volunteers year-round with a national organization. I know busy, okay? But here's the deal. There's going to come a day, and I guarantee you this because Marcia and I have experienced this, and I've seen so many other parents along the way experience this, but there's going to come a day when you're going to want another adult voice in your children's life. And if you show up here with your 16-year-old with an attitude that's so bad you can feel it before they walk through the door, we can't help you. It's almost too late. But if you will show up with your 5-year-old, and if you will show up with your 10-year-old and get them involved in these incredible ministry environments that we've created, when they're 16, they're going to have another trusted adult in their life saying the same things that you're saying to them, but they can't hear you. And the reason I know they can't hear you is because when you and I were 16, we couldn't hear our parents either, could we? So we want to help you. Why? Because you can't lead yourself by yourself. So the bottom line is this, and then we'll wrap up. Everybody ends up in life somewhere. Everybody does. We all end up somewhere in life. I want us to end up somewhere on purpose. And there's only one person who can ultimately determine where you end up. And it's not the person in the White House, and it's not the person in Congress. It's not the person you married, and it's not the person who is your parent, right? The only person who can determine where you end up is the person in the mirror. Because again, we face our greatest challenge every morning in the mirror. But we face something else in the morning in that mirror as well. And I don't want you to miss this, but every morning you face someone who was made in the image of God, who was created by God, and who is loved by God. And that person deserves the truth from you. You face someone who was created for community, and you face someone who does better when they prioritize what's most valuable as opposed to what they want now. So, lead yourself well, because the person in the mirror is depending on you. And the people that you lead, they're depending on you. And if you're a parent, there's some little faces in some smaller mirrors, and they're depending on you as well. And for those of you who are single, here's what I know about you. You are looking for someone, at least I hope you're looking for someone, who is leading themselves well. So you be the leader that the leader you're looking for is looking for. Because nothing says more about you than how you lead yourself. So let's just decide. Let's just decide I will not lie to myself, even when the truth about myself makes me feel bad about myself. And let's decide I'm going to prioritize what I value most, which is what my Savior values most, over what I want right now. And I will not attempt to lead myself by myself. And do you know what? If every person in this country made these three decisions, and if every person in this country made these three decisions and stuck to it, we would be greater than ever, because at the end of the day, our nation will never be greater than the people in the mirror. So let's go after it together, and let's lead ourselves well, and let's see what God does through us. Let me pray for you. God, none of us wants to do any self-reflection, because it's just painful to know that we've got work to do. And when we look at ourselves in the mirror every day, we're not honest about the flaws that we have and the things that are going on and the things that we need to change. And most of the times, we're the only ones that can see some of that. But you see it and you know it, because you created us. So God, help us to make some decisions this week. Help us to make some decisions that we're just going to be honest with ourselves, and we're going to tell ourselves the truth, even when the truth kind of hurts. And we're going to figure out what it takes to change some of that stuff in our lives. And then God, help us to prioritize and value what you value most, which is people and the people that you put around us. Help us to never forget that. And God, help us in every interaction, in every conversation, in everything that we do, that help us to reflect that value that you have to other people. God, I pray that as our country, as we go to vote this week, I pray for unity, and I pray for the tension to be released a little bit. But more than that, I pray that those of us who call ourselves your followers, that we would be your presence in our world wherever we are, and because of that, it would be enough to make a change. In Christ's name I pray. Amen. Let's stand and sing our song of response.